Okay, so it's good to be back. Okay, I want to share with you today an idea by Rabbi Riskin. I don't think we've done the Ben Sora or Mora all that many times. I don't know how many times we've done Kitetze over the years, definitely less than some of the other parashiyot. But he has an interesting take on the Ben Sora Mora. So he asks two questions. He says, first off,
who was it?
Sorry, Rabbi Riskin.
Okay.
So he says two things. He asks two questions. First off, what is a Ben Sora Mora, right? What are like the halachic ramifications? And the second question he asks is, whose fault is it? Is it the child, that the child has gone astray? Is it the parents? The parents have done a poor job on this child? Or is it society, that society was supposed to raise this, you know, I guess nurture this child better, and didn't. Okay.
Well, it's a great theoretical question concerning that there never was one.
All right, we'll get that. Greg, you missed the first like 30 seconds, so not much happened.
It was 10-10.
Right, it's true. So I figured as I saw you getting on, I posted. I think that it's at 10, but we're going to do it at 10 because it doesn't make a difference to me when I get up, so okay. It's just a easier, like, straighter time. But, okay, good to have you here. So, Rabbi Riskin, two questions. What is a Ben Sora Mora? And second of all, whose fault is it? Is it the child's fault, the parent's fault, or society's fault? So those are the two questions we're going to try to figure out today. So let's take a look at the psukim. There are four of them. So if people have a Ben Sorer Moreh, rebellious son, he doesn't listen to anything that his father and mother say, and they warn him, and he doesn't listen to them. But Tavsubo Aviv Vimo, and his parents have to, you know, his father and mother grab him, Votzio Tol Ziknei Ro Vel Shar Mekomo, and his parents bring him to the elders of the city, and to the gate of the place. So they say to the elders of the city, our child is a sorer, a more. He doesn't listen to our voice, and he is a glutton, v'sovei. We're gamu kol anshei roba avinim v'meit, and the entire city stones him with rocks. Uviarta rami kirbecha v'chol yisrael yishmu v'ro. And they'll get rid of the evil from within their midst, and all the Jews will hear, and they will fear. Okay, so that is basically our parsha in a nutshell. Now, it's hard to imagine that a parent would be willing to do this, right? To be able to say that, I mean, I certainly can say that I've had rough moments with my kids, maybe you as well, and there have definitely been frustrating moments. But to be able to get to the point where you're willing to go to the court in the city and say, my kid is impassable, knowing that the kid is going to be stoned to death, is a pretty big deal. So, I don't know. That's a tough one. So, okay, fine. Any questions before we go on? No. All right. Okay.
Textual only. Zikaya Rov, El Shar Mikomo. What does Shar Mikomo mean?
I guess the court used to generally be by the gate of the city, right? We see that by Lot. Right? Lot.
Right. So Mikomo is what?
His house. It could be his property.
I know what you mean. Like in Rosh Hashanah says, we talk about the Bezdin, whether they're sitting in the Shar.
Right. You're saying why Mikomo?
It should be the other way around, actually. It should be, they should bring it out to the gate, which is where there's a gate tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a good...
It's the thing, it's a singular term, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, I mean, the good news is, I think by next week, I'll be able to actually reach Svarim on my bookshelf while we're learning. Not so much. I have 15 boxes of all my old kitchen supplies that are blocking it. All right. It's a good question. I mean, I'd always assume that it's pretty much that, you know, you just take him out to the Sanhedrin of his place. Right. I mean, it seems to be that the community is involved in the whole process, right? Vamrul Ziknei Iro, Urgamu Kol Anshei Iro. They want this to happen. Right, so that, I mean, I guess that would be a good, you know, a good proof if you wanted to say that, you know, whose fault is it? Obviously, the child is a rebellious child, so that's going to be somewhat on the child. The parents certainly play a prime role in this, right? There's a lot of the mother and the father, you know, they have to say, Enenu shomea bekolenu, the child won't listen to us. But maybe society also has a part in it, right? Like the town has to admit that we didn't do such a great job. I remember when I was in graduate.
Maybe it's just the alleyway, like when you have an eruv, and you have the four or six houses around one little. I can't think of the Hebrew word for that.
Right, like the mavoy and the chatzer. Yeah. Right, I mean, it seems to be that, like, I mean, in general, there seems to be, like, a correlation between, like, the judgment and the gate, but it's passable. Okay, so this is what we have. So, again, still questions being, what is a ben sora more, and whose fault is it? So, Rashi gives us a little bit of a help with this. Would have been good if I would have quoted the Rashi, but only realized this after it was printed. So Rashi says that basically, what is a ben sora more? It is a child that eats a lot of meat, drinks a lot of alcohol, and is willing to steal in order to have the means to be able to do this. And Rashi then throws in a line, basically, that says, we'd rather that the child die more or less innocent rather than guilty. So we're killing the child based on the potential. We say that if we were to leave this Ben Sorer Mora alive, eventually what would happen? He wouldn't have enough money to supply his gluttonous lifestyle, and he would stand on the crossroads of the city and he would kill people. So basically, it sounds like, I mean, you know, where he's addicted to alcohol and meat, but this is like your typical drug addict who can't afford his habit, so is mugging people and breaking into people's homes to find the money to buy his to support his drug habit. That's essentially what it sounds like. So that's Rashi, but it is a little hard to understand how we're going to kill someone who is innocent-ish, meaning it would sound like if we had a 13-year-old kid in the States where we looked at and said, listen, you know what, he committed his first theft, and it seems like he's likely to, you know, be led down a path of stealing in order to, you know, be a drug addict, so let's lock him up now. That's not what happens, you know.
The guy it's only not in New York. Now you got free Mets tickets and a meal voucher.
Right, okay, but even back in the day when people were a little bit tough, like that 13-year-old was what? Like, it was a short amount of time in, like, you know, whatever, in juvie, as they called it. And then, like, the kid was back on the streets. And eventually, you know, you're like, oh, he's getting locked up for 50 years because he has a rap sheet that's about, like, a mile long. Doesn't seem to go, like, from 0 to 60 quite so quickly. So Srili will say, who cares? This is because the Gemara tells us that this never happened. So it's a theoretical construct. So if it's a theoretical construct, who cares? We'll address that in just a little bit from both the theoretical standpoint and also just in general, how do we understand the idea of you know, someone dying innocent-ish rather than being guilty? So the Medrash in Dvarim says the following. This is actually, I believe, it's more or less the Gemara in Sanhedrin as well. Kieli ish ben sorem ore. Ben samach le bagrut velo ish. So it has to be, it says kieli ish ben. Ish and ben are next to each other to tell us that it has to be when the person is older. Velo ish katan. If it's a child, he's patur. Sholin ichnas lechlal mitzos. Because he's not yet part of, he's not mechuyav yet mitzvot. So, So the Torah says, when does it become Ben Sora Mora? Mishayavishte Sarot. That's a halachic age when a person becomes, quote-unquote, an adult. It's when they have two hairs. So it's a small window from the time that the person has two pubic hairs until the lower part begins to fill up with hair. Hakafagid velo hakafat shel beitzim v'chol yamav eino ela shlosha chadashim bilvad. So we're talking about a 3-month window from pretty much the kid turning bar mitzvah until 3 months later. So now already you're talking about, you know, this is always a question that we could have on some of like the mitzvos, like they become so limited, is it really possible that it could have actually happened? So the Gemara then goes one step further and says, Eino nasa ben sor mor ache yochel basar v'yishta yayin. He has to have eaten a certain amount of meat, consumed a certain amount of wine. So Tan Rabbanan, achol kol macha v'lo achol basar, shata kol mashke v'lo shata yayin. Eino nasa ben sor mor ache yochel basar v'yishta yayin shem rezolel v'sovei. He has to be gluttonous both with regard to meat and with regard to wine. So in theory, if he, you know, I don't know what would be, I guess if he ate chicken, lots and lots of chicken, or it's possible even if he consumed lots of alcohol that was not wine, right? He takes a whole bottle of Absolut vodka and like absolutely finishes it. So he would not be, according to this, Zolo Vesove. But I don't, maybe, you know, I say alcohol, I don't know, beer maybe is not, you know, considered wine. I'm not sure, but that's what we have. So what's the deal here? What exactly is a ben sora mora? So Rabbi Riskin has an amazing pshat. This is probably why I picked this piece, because I thought this was amazing. So it says, you know, we sometimes have certain mitzvos that are set up to deal with the reality at the time, right? Not the world that we live in, but the world that the Torah lived in. So here would be an example. Right, why do we bring korbanos? So there is a pshat that says we bring korbanos. Why? Because it was a response to the time. At the time, everybody was bringing korbanos. So God says, I have to create an outlet to be able to bring korbanos in a halachically acceptable way so that people end up doing the right thing. I had another one in my head, I can't remember, but I guess even the beginning of Kitetse, right? Why do we have the Eishes Yifat Toar? It doesn't make sense that a person should go out to war and take a captive and bring her home, right? It's like, honey, look, everybody else brought home Persian rugs and I brought home, you know, this lady, right? It's like, what were you thinking, right? But why is it? So Rashi tells us even that the non-Jewish women used to like get themselves dressed up in order to prostitute themselves out at war. So in order to create a halachic paradigm that would work, the Torah says, okay, take her beheter and not beisser. But how do you do that? Okay, so it's a long, long process to ultimately be able to sleep with this woman. Okay, so Rabbi Riskin says, it's actually the same thing. You know, if we live in a time where children have more power over their parents than ever before, you see this all the time. You see kids telling their parents what to do, not the other way around. This is like in the times that the Torah lived in, so it was exact opposite. Parents had such unlimited power over their children. It was not uncommon to really like, you know, your child misbehaves, like, not talking about like giving them a patch, like you're talking about like beating them senseless. Like that was normal at the time, which I thought kind of gives like a little bit of context into like things like molech, that you would burn your child up as a korban, right? The child wasn't necessarily, you know, nowadays, like if the child like was walking in that way with the parent, there'd be a long conversation. A good chance in the end, the child would convince the parent that they themselves had to be brought as the korban to Molech. But back then, like, it was totally normal to be able to do that. So Rabbi Riskin says, because parents had such unlimited power, what the Torah is doing is it's creating limits to the hold that a parent has over their kids. So the Torah is saying, you want to be able to really, really give it to your kid, that's fine. But you could only do it in the context of, this is how much he's eating, this is how much he's drinking, this is how old he is. If he's younger, he's not yet a bar das. If he's older than that, you no longer have like dominion over him. That is how the Ben Sorer Umora works. Okay? So that is, that's Rabbi Riskin's take on why we have Ben Sorer Umora. But I want to share with you a beautiful idea by Rabbeinu Bechaye. Rabbeinu Bechaye answers the question of the Gemara. The Gemara tells us Ben Sorer Umora never happened. So why do we have it? It's in order to, the Gemara says, Mizamru Drosh Vekabel Schar. It's a nice intellectual pursuit. Torah wants us to learn. So go understand this mitzvah. That is why we have Ben Sorer Umora. So he says like this, Im kein yesh shol, if they ma hu tzricha Torah lehudia v'lechtov ma shelo haya, u'ma she'ein inyano noheg v'derech olam. Why do we need to have something? Spend so much time, right? What a waste of a chabura. We could have done, I don't know, the first two mitzvos in the parasha, or one of the other 74 mitzvos in the Torah. Why Ben Sorer Umora? If it's an inyan, eino noheg ba'olam. It's something that doesn't exist. So it is supposed to be a way to explain to us how much we are supposed to love God. There is no love greater than the love that a parent is supposed to have for a child. Right? Think about it. Right? If there are very few relationships that a person would be willing to give their life up for. But that's what the Torah is telling us. The Torah is telling us that the love that a parent has for their child is that strong. And what do we have? We have a child who is violating the word of Hashem. This is stupidity, right? This is in Hebrew, in Israel, what do they call? Anybody know what they call teenagers? Probably the best Hebrew expression, a tipeshes rei, right? Tipesh, it's a stupid teenager. Okay, a 13-year-old, you have just stepped into your tipeshes reis. So we're saying you love your kid, and your kid is an idiot. Chayavim heim shetegaber aleihem avad Hashem yitbarach al avad ben ad sheitzarchu lavio to hein beatzmam leveit meskila. So here it is. What the Torah is saying is you're obligated to take your love of God above the love of your child to bring them yourself to Beis Din to be stoned. It's not that Beis Din comes, right? The police cars come, sirens all lit, and they grab the child out of bed and they tell him that he's, you know, been, you know, this is what he's done and he's going down to the big house. No. What happens? You yourself, father and mother are walking the child to Beis Din to be killed. The Kfar Banyan Zebechiv Godel Avil Hashem Yitzbarach Mforesh B'Torah Binyan HaKedah. So the Rabbeinu Bechaye actually draws a parallel between the Ben Sorer Umora and the Akedah. Ki Avram Emiyota Avato Shel Yitzchak Azav Chazaka Keben Shebach Elav Achar Zikna VeYeyush. Think about Avraham. Avram loved this kid Yitzchak so much. He was the child of his old age that came to him after he was old and he gave up hope. He never thought he was going to have this kid. He had Yishmael and said, okay, this is the best I'm ever going to have. Afal pi kein kishitzivo la krivo ola tarach v'davar miyad. As soon as he was told, bring this child as an ola, so what happens right away, he jumped in. V'gvir avad Hashem yitbarach al avato shel Yitzhak. His love of God superseded his love of Yitzhak. And that is why Avram is called my beloved. So and the world knew the great love that Avraham had for his kid. And that's why the Torah tells us that we should learn, right, delve into it and get reward. What are you going to get reward? You're going to get reward from the message. The message what? That no matter how much we love our kids, we have to love God more. I put the last line in just because I thought it's like amazing, right? The Rabbeinu B'chaya is writing this as he's alive and saying, Kach shamati mipi harav, whoever that is, Mori sheyechyeh. All right, so this was written several hundred years ago, and yet, he's quoting his Rebbe sheyechyeh. All right, probably we could update it to say Zatzal. But that Rabbeinu B'chaya is drawing an unbelievable parallel to the Akedah and saying that no matter what, we have to bow to the Ratzon Hashem. And that's the message of Ben Sora Mora, even if it is just a theoretical construct. But let's assume that actually there was the potential for it to happen. Then we have to get back to Rashi's question, better to die innocent-ish rather than guilty. So let's take a look at Bereishis. Right? Before, Chaf Bet is the Akedah, that's the Rabbeinu B'chaye, now Perach Chaf Aleph, right before the Akedah. V'yashkem Avram B'boker, v'ykach lechem, v'chem mayim, v'yitena l'gar, v'sam al shichma, v'yelad, v'yishalcheh, v'teylech, v'teyta, v'indar, v'yishalva. So what happens? Avram gets up early in the morning. He gives bread and water to Hagar, and she puts it on her shoulder, and she takes the child, and he sends him off, and they go and they wander in the desert by Be'er Sheva. They finish the water, and she throws, right? Hagar throws the child under one of the trees. And she goes and she sits underneath the tree, a distance away, a bow, an arrow's shot away. She doesn't want to see the death of the child. And she's across from it, and she lifts up her voice and she cries. So God hears the voice of the nar, right? Hears the voice of the child crying, and an angel of God calls Hagar and says, Hagar, what's your problem? Al tiri, do not be afraid. So what happens? The angel says, "Don't worry, God has heard the voice of the child." Ba'asher hu sham, right? These three words are the making of a Rosh Hashanah drasha in so many shuls for so many years. Ba'asher hu sham. So we'll get back to what that means in a minute. Kumi siyat anar v'achzigi yadei boki lugoi gadol simenu. Pick up the child. And he's going to be okay because God is promising that he's going to be a goy gadol. Her eyes are open and she realizes, oh my gosh, this whole time we were right by a 7-Eleven and there was plenty of water here all along. I just didn't see that it was just over the bend or whatever, just around the bend. She gives the water and the child lives. Rashi says, what's Basher Husham? Lefi masim shu osa achshav hu nidon. He is judged based on how he is now. V'lo lefi mashu atid lasot. And not based upon what he's ultimately going to become. Wait a second. This is the exact opposite of the Ben Sorer Amore. The Ben Sorer Amore, right, what happens? We're told by the Ben Sorer Amore that he is judged on what he's going to be. And this, we're told that he's judged based on what he is right now. So Rashi says the fisha you malachi ashar mekatrim vomer ribono shel olam mishatid zaru lami panecha betzamat hamalalu be'er. Right, the angels say, God, how can you do this? This child Yishmael, his descendants are ultimately going to kill the Jewish people with when they're thirsty, and you're going to give him a be'er. B'umeshiva machshav ma'u tzadik rasha. So God says, well, come on. What is he right now? Is he a tzaddik or is he a rasha? So I'm a little tzaddik. He's a tzaddik. So I'm a lehem lefi ma'asav shalach shavani dano v'zehu basher usham. That is how, says the Bereishis Rabbah, how we judge him. How do we reconcile that? How do we understand the fact that Ben Sora Mora says we know potentially he's going to be bad and we kill him and Yishmael is going to be horrible. His descendants are going to kill the Jewish people. And we let him live. So the easiest answer would be the Gemara in Sanhedrin. This didn't happen, so it doesn't matter, right? Basher Husham is for real, and Ben Sora Mora is not. But I want to share with you a beautiful idea that Rabbi Riskin shares in the name of Rabbi Lookstein. Rabbi Lookstein, the one that died in 1979, so not, I guess, the father of the Rabbi Lookstein that retired from KJ and Ramaz. So the Mishnah says, Hayavi rotsev vimo eino rotsev. What happens if we have a father and a mother? The father says, I am done with this kid. The mom says, I don't know, little Chaim is so cute. How can we do that to him? Aviv eino rotsev vimo rotsev, or vice versa. Eino nasa ben tzor morad sheishneim rotsev. Both parents have to agree. So Rabbi Yehuda omer, im lo hayta imo ru'uya l'aviv, eino nasa ben tzor amore. If it was a bad shidduch, mom and dad were not on the same level, right? Dad settled when marrying. It's not a ben tzor amore. Haya echem mehem gideim. If one of them was, has no hands. What's the, an amputee. Oh, chiger. Or one of them has no legs, o ilaim, or he's mute, o suma, or blind, o cheresh, or deaf, enu nasa ben sora more. He does not become a ben sora more. And then the Gemara goes to prove how it is. Vatapsu bo avivimo. They have to grab him. Well, you can't grab him if someone's missing a hand. Votzio to. Right, they walk him out to the Shar Mekomo. Well, you can't do that if they're missing a leg. Ve'amru, and they say Benenu Zeh Sorer Moreh. They can't do that if they're mute. Benenu Zeh, they're pointing to him. You can't do that if you're blind. And then Shomeya Bekolenu doesn't listen to our voice. So Velo Chereshin, they can't be deaf. Otherwise, they wouldn't know if he doesn't listen. So it's a nice Mishnah. But Lookstein says something unbelievable. He says the following. He says, both parents need to be on the same page. It means that that's the Mishnah in general. But Rabbi Lookstein takes it one step further. He says they have to have the hands to embrace him. They have to have the legs to accompany him. They have to have the voice to have discussion with them. They have to have the eyes to see the child, and they have to hear, and they have to have ears that work to hear the child's pleas in the child's dreams. If they're missing any of these, how can you hold them account? How can you hold the child accountable? Says Rabbi Riskin, perhaps the way to reconcile Yishmael and our paradigm that's set up in Ben Sora Mora is based on this Mishnah. Both parents really need to be on the same page. Both parents need to have all of these abilities. So if you think about it, Yishmael had a father that certainly was on the right page, but his mother laita ru'uya laviv, first off. But you have to ask yourself, knowing who Hagar is, does she really have the hands to embrace him, the legs to accompany him, the voice to discuss, the eyes to see this child for who he is, and the ears to hear the child's dreams, etc., etc.? Says Rabbi Riskin, that is perhaps how we could reconcile the two. He ends off with a beautiful idea. He says that there are three partners. We know there really are three parents to a child. There's obviously the father and the mother, but there's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, perhaps if this is true, that a lacking on the child's part, the parent's part, or the fact that the parents forgive the kid, Ahiyaviv rotzev, imo ein rotzev, vice versa. If that's the case, then perhaps Hashem also plays into this as well. Hashem knows the depths of a child better than anybody else, even better than the parents. And so perhaps what happens is the child gets a pass sometimes, and maybe this is how we understand the Gemara in general, the Gemara that says that this never happened. It's because sometimes Hashem has to intervene and say, I know where this kid is coming from. And I know that it would be inappropriate to punish this child and to make this child suffer for the fact that he grew up in the environment he grew up in, or that his genetic makeup is what it is. It's beyond his control. It's an interesting way to understand the Ben Sorer or Moreh. Okay. Thank you so much, everyone. Appreciate it.